Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 2, Crowley Golden and the Isis Heart, a tale of Egyptian revival, written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Good evening. Welcome to episode 8, and thanks for tuning in. So, listeners, last time we were following Tina Bleiberman, who was learning a few demoniacal fun facts with Grandpa Theo at the cottage. Then we dropped in on the Crux Ansata, just as they were about to embark on a little night run to Colma, the necropolis south of the city with its overflowing abundance of cemeteries. But more on that in a minute. As we fade in, we find ourselves up on Green Street, at the house of Yuki O'Malley. Chapter 8, Graveyard Dust. It had been a perfectly uneventful Saturday night in the new house on Green Street. Yuki and the doctor having had just spent an evening of quality time keeping to their new tradition of movie night. Well, mostly it had involved Yuki watching the DVD of Hitchcock's Vertigo that Mrs. Flack had lent her, while the doctor skimmed over a half-finished report that she was working on. A large super deluxe pizza later, after Jimmy Stewart and Kim Novak hadn't exactly ended up all happily ever after, Yuki excused herself and climbed the stairs towards her bedroom. The large windows offered the perfect picture of a calm night sky. The fog seemed to be all heading south, leaving the view of the cityscape unusually clear. A bright gibbous moon hung over the imposing silhouette of the Transamerica Tower, or Pyramid Building as it was known locally. And even though Yuki had been in the city a while now, somehow she had never gotten used to that building's particular profile. It had always seemed so out of place, even a little alien. Something which Yuki could identify with all too well. Her little episode earlier in the week was an uncomfortable reminder of just how weird things could get. The day she had dared to think that things were what most people would consider normal and had ventured out to visit Mrs. Flack at her little house out in the Richmond. One minute she was riding along on the 38 bus, and then, inexplicably, she had found herself in Ashbury Heights standing on the Golden's doorstep. And even though Yuki still couldn't explain how the unexpected visit had happened, it hadn't been all bad. Aside from Grandpa Theo's rather excellent peanut butter cookies, Yuki had also gotten an earful of his best advice. How she should just bide her time, that Crowley would eventually come around, and the mere fact that she had just shown up like she did was certainly more than remarkable. Yuki especially liked the part where Grandpa Theo told her that if she just gave Wilshire Sutton enough rope, she'd end up hanging herself. Perhaps Yuki didn't care for that part so very much. Well, maybe just a teeny bit. While Yuki flopped down in her bed, temporarily basking in visions of a dangling Wilshire Sutton, a familiar cold draft suddenly whipped through the room. In a flash of purple light, Tina appeared, looking unusually chipper. Yuki squinted against the vivid display and managed to smile.
Hey, you! That's some entrance you've got worked out.
Tina smirked and made an ironic little curtsy.
Dude! I have been working on my presentation.
Mm-hmm. So what have you been up to? No more break-ins, I hope.
Nah, you know, been getting out and about, meeting new people. You should try it sometime.
Oh, ha ha, very funny. Wait, did you say new people?
Yeah, you're not gonna believe this. So, I was flying over to the Legion when I saw all these idiots hanging around, so I go over and check it out, and guess who I saw?
Yuki shook her head.
Audra freaking Lamont. Standing right there!
Tina launched into a lively recounting of the tale. Yuki's eyes got wider and wider as Tina flew around the room, acting out all the details, especially when she came to the part where she nearly had Lamont in her clutches and then suddenly found herself at the cottage.
Wait, the cottage? You mean Crowley's grandfather?
He's only like some crazy old wizard in Birkenstocks. He totally summoned my ass.
He what? No way!
Yeah, I just got back from there. I ended up spending the whole day with that old crackpot.
Yuki was just going to mention that she had also found herself unexpectedly at the cottage recently, when Tina interrupted.
Oh, and guess what? You're gonna die when you hear this one. It turns out, I'm not a ghost after all.
Yuki raised an eyebrow.
Oh, really? So what are you?
Wait for it. I'm a demon!
A blank look crossed Yuki's face.
Is that good?
Well, that's what we're trying to sort of work out. So far, so good, I guess. Oh, and I also found out what that dude with the hair and the cape is. DeVinter's brother.
Yuki nodded her head.
Yeah, I've already heard all about him. Grandpa Theo told me when I was over there.
Oh, yeah, right. And the other day when you just showed up out of the blue, I bet he never told you why that happened, did he?
Yuki looked puzzled.
No. I guess he really didn't say anything about it.
She tried to think back to that day. Her memory was still a little fuzzy, and somehow, out of everything she had talked about with GT, that particular topic had never seemed to come up.
Yeah, I still don't really know how I got there.
It's because Crowley's a spellcasting idiot.
Yuki's eyes popped.
What? What do you mean?
GT said Crowley had set off, I don't know, some sort of love spell without realizing it. It was supposed to, like, drag his true love back to him kicking and screaming or something. I guess that means you. Ha! Ooh, true love. Gag me.
Yuki flushed a little, but still thought it didn't quite make sense.
But wait a minute. If that's really what happened, then why wasn't Crowley there?
Because that troll Wilshire Sutton got a hold of him first. She must have sensed the competition or something.
Yuki tensed at the name.
Of course, because of Wilshire.
Ugh. What's your problem? You know, if for some reason you actually like this doofus, you gotta stand up for yourself more. Not just sit around like some lame-ass, sulky lump.
Yuki still looked unconvinced.
Oh, yeah? So what am I supposed to do? Like, go punch Wilshire out or something? I don't think so. She's 17.
Tina grinned and cracked her knuckles.
Better than that to the professionals.
And what does that mean?
Well, tomorrow's Sunday, right? GT says that the beast usually hangs out around Union Square on Sundays. We should go down and scare the crap out of her.
Yuki's eyes lit up at the notion, and then she deflated slightly.
But what if she's with Crowley?
No problem. He's not going to be around. GT said he's up at Sloan's until Sunday night.
Yuki still seemed to hesitate.
I don't know.
Tina rolled her eyes and was about to launch into a convincing tirade about the many joys of ass-kicking, when suddenly her eyes went wide and she began to turn her head like she was adjusting her scanner's antenna. Yuki looked at her warily.
Uh-oh. What's going on? What are you hearing or whatever?
Tina seemed to be focusing all of her attention on the elusive signal when a wide grin nearly split her face in two.
Oh my god. No way. The mall and both DeVinters, all of them together? This is too good to resist.
Tina shimmered across the room, almost like she was going to walk right through the windows.
Tina, where are you going?
They're heading south. They're almost out of range. I gotta go now before I lose them. I'll be back. Don't worry.
Wait, are you sure that's a good idea? Grandpa Theo said...
Tina's tiara sparked up, and in a flash of purple light, she was gone before Yuki could finish her sentence.
That those guys were really dangerous.
Yuki sat there, staring at her phone, wondering if she should make a particular call to Ashbury Heights. Yet somehow she had a nagging suspicion that it might already be too late for even Grandpa Theo to do anything that could help. At 20 minutes to midnight, the shiny black 67 Pontiac GTO cut through the night as it headed south down Highway 280. Danilov sat behind the wheel with Audra riding shotgun. From the back seat, you could just see Desmond's little head bobbing up and down as the purr of the 400 cubic inch V8 monster caused the entire car to vibrate slightly as it sped along. Desmond popped his head up to snatch a glimpse out of his window. The darkened scenery that streaked by seemed unfamiliar to him.
Where are we exactly?
Danilov looked in the rearview mirror and sneered.
You've lived here for over a century, and you still don't know your way around. Useless. Just keep your head down. The last thing we need is to get pulled over for not having a proper child safety seat.
Desmond sulked back down out of sight, looking murderous, while Audra beamed.
Nah, not to worry. The highway patrol are a specialty of mine.
Denilov raised his fist, which was adorned with a heavy set of brass knuckles that sparked when he flexed his hand.
A specialty of mine as well, should it come to it.
Audra's eyes, cat-like, shined in the sparking light.
Yes, and this makes my point exactly. Why do we have to attend this little desecration anyway? What do you need us for? I don't see why you couldn't have just left little Desmond and me back at the new hideout, where I could be having a cocktail with my feet up.
At this, Desmond piped up from the back seat.
Yes, and what does he expect me to do? Dig up some old bones?
Denilov shook his head.
Now, let's have a bit of team spirit. This'll be the Maestro's test run for the new armored guards, and he'd be ever so grateful if you both turned up.
Desmond sunk back down in his seat.
I'm sure he didn't put it quite like that.
A bunch of walking dump trucks clomping around? Not exactly subtle. Don't you think that someone might notice?
Denilov snickered.
Now why do you suppose he keeps you around, dearie? Anybody wanders into our evening's activities, you just give him a little look-see, savvy?
Audra nodded her head.
After that, anybody who doesn't get the message can deal with me.
Denilov flexed his grip, and the brass knuckles sparked to life again.
They can come and get a special kiss goodnight. Permanently.
3.5 miles later, after moving through the eerie landscape of identical little boxy houses all clinging to the surrounding hillsides, the slight incline of the freeway crested, revealing a vast expanse of shopping malls and car dealerships.
Welcome to Coma.
Audra suddenly looked skeptical.
Are you sure you went the right way? This isn't exactly what I would call a necropolis. Not to worry, my dear. We're nearly at our destination.
Denilov guided the GTO over towards the off-ramp. Where there had only been a few cars on the freeway, the streets of Colma were completely deserted. The GTO turned and passed several used car lots, all dark and closed for the night.
Is there anything in this town besides shopping malls and car lots? Oh, yes, my dear. Oh, yes.
An innocent-looking side street suddenly turned and opened out into a large boulevard that was lined with cemeteries on either side as far as the eye could see. Audra was clearly impressed.
I had no idea. Incroyable. But how do you know which one is for the rendezvous?
Denilov looked out through the windshield and sneered at the aberrant fog bank that was gathering in the distance.
I think the rendezvous is pretty flippin' obvious, dearie.
Black GTO slowed just outside the front gates of the Lady of Mercy Memorial Park, which conveniently happened to be hanging open. Denilov nodded with approval.
Looks like someone's gone and made things nice and easy for us.
He switched off the car's headlights and began to slowly prowl forward. There was a circular drive that snaked off into several narrow lanes, all of which seemed to be increasingly enveloped in the drifting blanket of fog.
It appears as though we're here just in time.
The car slid past numerous rows of tombstones that gradually grew taller as the slope increased, until near the top of the hill, they had finally reached their destination. Suddenly, they could hear the deep thrum of the Epeiron hovering above a cluster of stately and rather ostentatious mausoleums. The dark belly of the airship descended as several mooring lines were released. A squad of glinting brass shuaptis suddenly slid down the cables, landing gracefully on the ground while they secured the enormous zeppelin in place. Another squad followed. They dropped down with barely a sound and then moved in unison until they all stood at attention in the distance. Denilov turned off the car and stepped out. His silver hair and black cloak were swept back as he approached and slowly faded into the fog. Audra cautiously emerged and gathered up the collar of her white mink, while Desmond kicked the passenger seat forward and climbed out from the back seat, hissing under his breath, both of their eyes locked on the murky shadow hovering above. Then, as if on cue, there was the familiar clunk from the airship's undercarriage, and the loading platform slowly descended. The figure of Mortmain appeared, flanked by two of the massive armored guards, each with the customary turquoise blaze burning from under their heavy brows. Mortmain spoke a word. Instantly, the two guards jumped down and began lumbering towards the nearest of the mausoleums. A sound of tortured metal rang out as one of the guards ripped off the tomb's door and sent it crashing in the distance. The hulking shape disappeared inside and began tossing out caskets like they were matchboxes. The old coffins cracked open when they hit the asphalt in a shower of splintered wood and bone dust, The guard then exited, moved to the neighboring mausoleum, and began the same procedure all over again. The other guard began shaking out the broken coffin's contents. It threw aside the remnants of decayed clothing and gathered all of the fragments of bone and dust into a single pile. The squad of Shuapti moved forward, each carrying a metal canister with a flexible hose. While the hulking guard pulverized the larger bits of bone with its metal fists, the Shuapti switched on their canisters and began vacuuming up the heap of powdery remains. Audra rolled her eyes.
Well, I'm certainly glad we came all this way to see such a charming, domestic little scene.
Desmond merely swallowed, saying nothing. Mortmain and Danilov's attention was also held fixed with the grisly proceedings, as now brass urns were being tossed aside and sent off clattering in a shower of useless ashes. Danilov raised an eyebrow.
Hey, what's wrong with the urns? Why not just take the ashes?
Mortmain looked amiable and scratched his chin.
The ashes are of no use to us. The cremation process burns everything away. We need slightly fresher product, but not too fresh, you understand. This is why we are here at the mausoleums, away from the moisture of the ground. Makes for the perfect consistency.
Danilov looked like he suddenly had a bad taste in his mouth.
Perfect consistency for what?
Mortmain laughed and patted Danilov on the shoulder.
Ah, all in good time, my friend. In time, you will know all.
Back by the GTO, Desmond was pacing while Audra was languidly draped on the car hood, lighting a cigarette. Before she could exhale, her keen golden eyes suddenly shot skyward. They tracked the violet streak of light that had suddenly emerged over the distant horizon. The blazing comet that seemed to be heading right for them.
No, I don't believe it. Here we go again.
Desmond looked up and followed Audra's gaze. His tiny mouth fell open in shock.
I suppose we shouldn't be surprised that she turned up. Danilov, look out! We've got company!
While Mortmain managed to jump out of the way, Danilov had turned around too late. He was suddenly inundated by a barrage of purple fireballs that rained down on him one after the other. His twisting form went up in a violet blaze and was sent careering back into the fog. And while Audra and Desmond ducked out of sight behind the GTO, there was a brilliant flash of purple light, revealing the grinning figure of Tina Bleiberman, hands on her hips, hovering just above the ground.
So, who's ready for a world-class ass-kicking?
The Shuapti all stopped their vacuuming and looked over at Tina in unison. Tina scoffed like they were barely worth her attention.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I disturb you?
Tina's tiara sparked to life, and she set off one enormous fireball that collided with the entire squad, sending them scattering like bowling pins. Tina began to brush her hands together like it had been a good day's work, and then craned her neck towards the cowering figures of Audra and Desmond, attempting to hide behind the GTO.
Hey, please don't think you guys are hiding back there. I can totally see you.
While Tina cracked her knuckles in anticipation, the sound of large metallic footsteps clomping from the direction of the broken mausoleums caught her attention. The hulking forms of the two armored guards slowly began to close in, the blue-green light from their eyes burning through the fog. Tina lit up accordingly.
Whoa! Now that's more like it! You two look like you could actually do some damage!
There was a sparking tiara, and Tina's fists of fury were suddenly like flaming violet sword blades. Several flashes of purple energy later, Tina was standing alone amid a pile of armored rubble. Broken limbs twitched and sputtered, and all seemed to be leaking the same swirling blue-green vapor. As it rapidly dissipated into the air, the metal remnants finally fell still, lifeless. But before Tina had a chance to reflect, the figure of Danilov reappeared. His charred cloak was in tatters, and his knuckles were blazing red hot. Yet, oddly enough, rather than charge in, he held his ground with a little smile on his face. Tina decided that she would take it upon herself to close the distance between them. As she got closer, she realized that although Danilov's clothes were certainly burnt, somehow his skin remained seemingly undamaged. Tina scoffed.
Looks like you're not quite done yet. Better throw you back on the fire.
Tina's tiara sparked up and she raised her hands, preparing to unleash another barrage of fireballs. When suddenly, the tiara's violet fury was abruptly snuffed out, and Tina found herself unable to move a single particle of her being. she could merely hover there, frozen in place. Danilov took a few steps forward, his face splitting with an evil grin.
Oh, you're in for it now, darling. You've gone and pissed off the boss.
Over his shoulder, the towering silhouette of Anaximander's black armor suit appeared out of the fog. With a clawed, armored hand outstretched in the direction of Tina, the strangely amplified voice rang out from the thing's helmet.
We have little patience for you now. You have already delayed us here long enough. You will be mitigated, then consumed at our leisure.
Anaximander hissed out an evil phrase, and a sphere of energy suddenly surrounded Tina. He closed his fist, and the orb shrank down in size, compressing Tina's essence down along with it. Needless to say, this didn't sit very well with Tina. Tina's voice became very small as the orb shrank down to the size of a tiny pearl. The amethyst tiara clattered to the ground. Danilov stepped forward and produced a small, elegant bottle made of enameled glass. He removed the stopper, and Anaximander guided the tiny, shimmering orb inside. Danilov locked the stopper on tight, and Anaximander relaxed his hand. From inside the little bottle, Danilov could feel Tina's essence expand as far as it could inside the small confines. She began to ping against the inside of the glass like a trapped insect. In the distance, Mortmain appeared looking a little shaken, but otherwise all right. Anaximander began relaying new orders for the work to continue, and the shattered Chawapti began to emerge from the fog and retrieve their fallen vacuum canisters. From above, the loading platform descended again, carrying two more of the armored guards. Mortmain began directing them to the next mausoleum door. As work progressed, Audra and Desmond finally emerged from behind the car and approached Danilov, who was turning the little glass bottle over in his hands. Audra looked skeptical.
You sure you can keep her locked away in there? I believe your brother tried something like this before.
Danilov smiled from under his brow.
Not to worry. It won't be long before the Maestro will take care of her once and for all. Oh, and then there's this.
Danilov knelt down to retrieve the amethyst tiara, and then handed it to Audra.
Perhaps a bit more you, I think. Yes?
Audra beamed in spite of herself. She always had been a pushover for new jewelry, regardless of what body it had fallen off of recently. Her smile faded forthwith at the approaching figure of Anaximander.
Brother Danilov, you will keep our quarries safe for the time being.
As if in response, the tiny sound of pinging began to ring out from the inside of the bottle. Anaximander paused at the sound.
Such a feisty little imp. We will deal with her in time.
The tinkling sound increased until the entire bottle seemed to vibrate.
Such a strange resonance. I believe someone is trying to summon our little friend at this very moment. The call is very insistent. Brother Danilov, it seems I have another task for you.
Yes, Maestro. Whatever you require.
Anaximander waved his hand over the bottle and spoke a phrase, while spreading his other hand wide over a nearby patch of ground. A pulsing line of blue-green energy cut through the air, forming a quavering doorway that issued an icy draft.
This gate pinpoints the origin of the summons. Find out who wants to see our little friend here so badly.
Danilov squared his shoulders and stepped through. Anaximander called after him before he disappeared.
Oh, and I want them alive, brother. Just bring them back here for a little chat, yes?
Theodorus Golden sat at the long work table, scribbling down some notes that he had cross-referenced through yet another ancient leather-bound book. Behind his spectacles, his eyes seemed deliberately fixed on the pieces of paper in front of him, rather than the red chalk star that sat empty at the far end of the room. Theo's eyes flitted to his watch, and then quickly back to the papers while he mumbled to himself.
It's been a few minutes. What's keeping her?
Now that he and Tina Bleiberman had become acquainted, Theo had thought that it might be a little rude to repeat his previous use of the Kirkendall formula. It had a certain old-world fire-and-brimstone quality that seemed a little heavy-handed when you were already on a first-name basis with the demon in question. Theo chuckled to himself at the very idea. Nevertheless, he had foregone the imposing vestments and staff this time around, opting for just his favorite velour tracksuit, a perky powder blue in case you were wondering. Theo had also checked his usual well-practiced better judgment and followed Crowley's lead by using the simple Trismegistus star inscription, which may have been more polite, but apparently didn't deliver nearly as reliable a result. Another minute had dragged by, and Theo thumped his fist down, turned, and gave the empty red star in the corner his full attention. The phone call from Yuki O'Malley earlier that evening replayed in his head.
I'm really worried. She just went, whoosh! There was no stopping her. I'm not sure what she's up to, but I've seen that look in her eyes before. She's gonna go all punk rock, I just know it.
Theo shook his head and tried to suppress a little grin at the notion that Tina was off doing exactly what she had just promised that she wouldn't do, getting into trouble. He turned on his stool and returned to the stack of papers. It was then that the air suddenly seemed to electrify. There was a draft of cold air that caused the papers on the work table to stir. Theo pushed his glasses up the bridge of his nose and turned with a satisfied grin that was promptly wiped away. A doorway seemed to be hovering just above the inert chalk star. A rectangular-shaped patch of velvety gray undulating fog outlined in pulsing blue-green energy. A strange current of pressure ran through the room that made Theo's ears pop. And then it was as if a door to the outside had suddenly opened. Cold night air and the smell of damp earth came rushing in through the new doorway. Thin tendrils of fog began to creep along the suspended boundary and slowly mingled down along the workshop floor. An instant chill filled the room as a figure dressed in a tattered black cloak stepped out from the darkness. Theo's eyes popped as Tina Bleiberman's description of the dude with the hair and the cape instantly came to mind. Apparently, she hadn't exaggerated. Theo attempted to sit upright on his little stool as the man in the charred cape approached.
Danilov Derventer, I presume.
The man brushed his long silver hair aside to reveal a savage grin.
Quite right, quite right. I'll give you points for doing your homework. So, forewarned, forearmed, right?
Danilov raised his fist and flexed. The undulating edge of the brass knuckles sparked to life and glowed red hot.
I'm all warmed up for ya. Your little charge has been giving us quite a bit of bother. Shame she wasn't up for the challenge.
Theo's throat suddenly went very dry.
Charge? What do you mean?
Danilov blinked, looking amused.
Oh yes, very convincing. You're having a laugh, ain't ya? Suppose you tell me what this is, then.
Danilov pointed down to the red chalk star on the floor.
Someone's been playing at being a mighty sorcerer, haven't they? Sending that blue-haired demon after us tonight. Don't bother denying it. We traced her last summoning back here to this very spot.
Blue-haired demon? Like I could send her anywhere. She's an independent operator if I ever saw one. Why? What have you done to her?
Oh, nothing that she didn't have coming. And if I were you, I'd start worrying about my own scrawny little neck right about now.
Now you just wait a minute. I've got nothing to do with this.
Huh, like it or not, you're involved. Now, you're gonna come with me and answer a few questions. If we like your answers, maybe you'll get to keep breathing.
It was at this point that despite his trembling hands, Theo found his eyes discreetly moving in the direction of his staff leaning against the wall, just out of reach. As quick as he could, Theo made his move. In one nimble motion, Theo snatched up his staff and spoke a phrase. The resulting ball of burning energy was sent careening across the workshop in the direction of Danilov, where it exploded into an instant inferno. Theo shielded his eyes against the glare, when just as suddenly, the workshop returned to normal light. Theo lowered his hands to find Danilov snickering, and remarkably unsinged, while the burning orb hovered just above his brass-knuckled hand.
Oh, and what's this then? A wee bit of Nuriel's fire? Next you'll be singing me the Song of Solomon. You're out of your depth, old man. Here, why don't you have this back?
Danilov tossed the ball of flame back at Theo, who barely managed to scramble out of the way just before it exploded in midair. He tripped over his own staff and toppled over backwards, hitting his head on the work table before falling to the floor. While Theo's singed notes fluttered down around him, Danilov looked a little disappointed as he stooped to pick up the crumpled figure. He turned and began to lumber back towards the dark doorway, when a glint of brass suddenly caught his eye.
Now, what do we have here?
He brought one of his boots down and shattered the rectangular case. Then he kicked the bits of broken glass aside and smiled.
Very nice. Very nice indeed. An unexpected little bonus.
Danilov adjusted Theo's dead weight and knelt down to pick up one of the leather straps attached to the strange brass mechanism. The finely wrought segments gleamed and fit together so seamlessly, like the narrow body of a strange wingless insect that you buckled onto your back. Then he noticed the stamp on the underside of the thing.
Varno Golden's Dragonflyer, 1909, patent pending. We'll all be.
Danilov hoisted the Dragonflyer over his shoulder and stepped back through the dark doorway, which melted away as it closed behind him. And so, Chapter 8 comes to a close. Special thanks go to guest voices on this episode, Lisa Snare as Tina, and Leanne Parker as Yuki. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and in comptech.com. I'd also like to thank Random Coil UK for their cover of Satie's Nacian No. 1. For more info, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 9. And until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.